This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade. Right now, I'm digging into the history of incredible infrastructure projects of the 1930s, including the Hoover Dam, the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, and more. The promise is in the title, History That Doesn't Suck. Available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
John, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for taking the time to hop on. Obviously, we know about the big name who's expected to go number one in Caleb Williams. How do you think those next few picks are going to play out between Washington, New England, etc.?
I think you're going to see quarterbacks come off the board. I'm not going to buck the trend that everybody's kind of on right now. I think it's pretty accurate once you get to this point in the draft. You usually have a pretty good idea about these next couple picks. I think you'll see Jaden Daniels, then you'll see Drake May. And I think Arizona might actually stick and take Marvin Harrison. They just already have so much draft capital. Like they're going to have to weigh that against, you know, trading down. And so I think they're going to stay. And then it gets interesting at the Chargers pick, where I think at five they need to take one of the two receivers that's left, Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers, and they may ultimately decide to go with an offensive lineman, and maybe they do that after a trade down, someone trying to come up for a quarterback. I would at least trade down if I were them if you're not going to take one of the wideouts, but to me, these guys are game-changing wide receivers. There's three of them in this class. We almost never get that. I don't know how you pass on one of these guys if you're there. There's a lot of good offensive linemen, but you can get those later in the draft if you need. I just think you got to get one of these game changers at wide out.
Well, John, you talk about the wide receivers, and we know they all have their interesting skill sets, whether it's Marvin Harrison Jr., or you take a look at Malik Nabers and Odunze. What's the separating factor between each player, or is it a matter of team need?
I think they're different stylistically for sure, but with some of these teams at the top, I mean, what don't they need at wide receiver when it comes to Arizona or Los Angeles, at least the Chargers? So, I mean, even the Giants, same thing. Like, you look at their room and you're like, who's here that we're really sure is going to be around long-term? You know, these teams don't have long-term solutions to that position. So, you know, I always think about building your wide receiver core sort of like a basketball team in some ways and skill set-wise. And I think that these guys are just starting from the ground up, these teams. And so they can probably draft anybody and have it fit. I mean, I would just guess that Roma Dunze, I've guessed that he is maybe more of a fit for the Giants, for the personality of the Giants staff and some other teams. You know, the Chargers very well, probably one of those teams could be more of a Nabers team, I think, if he's the guy for them. And so those are just guesses, but just when you think about a fit perspective, like, we just haven't seen Justin Herbert with great speed at the wide receiver position. I mean, Keenan Allen's a great player, not necessarily known for his speed. Mike Williams, a contested catch guy, certainly a vertical threat, but not a blazer. And it would just be nice to see an arm like that coupled with some rare speed and acceleration, and Nabers definitely has that. So it could be a very fun combination, a Mahomes, Tyreek Hill-esque combination with the Chargers if they take Nabers, and that's who I'd be pounding the table for. But there's a lot of smoke on this J.C. Latham, and Jim Harbaugh loves him and all this stuff with that pick, so we'll see what they end up doing.
John Ledyard is here with us from the Audibles and Analytics podcast, covers everything NFL draft. When you think about the teams that don't necessarily need a QB, especially in that top, I guess, 10 or 15, what team do you think is most likely to say, all right, I'm going to trade out of my spot and let somebody else get in here? We know Minnesota certainly has capital at 11 and 23.
I think Atlanta's the one that makes the most sense. I mean, like I said, the Chargers could definitely do it. There's been talk about Tennessee being the team that does that as well. Atlanta's the one that makes the most sense to me just because they've made a lot of moves in recent off seasons and drafts. And so they're a team that it feels like their rosters, they really need corner and they need defensive line, edge rusher, pass rusher. Can they move back in the teens and probably get a pretty good player at one of those positions? I think so, given how the tackles, the wideouts, and the quarterbacks are getting pushed up the board in this draft. So they may feel like they can move out, you know, three spots to Minnesota. They probably still have everybody that's on their board. You know, they've made moves at wide receiver. You know, they've made moves, and their offensive line is in. They've drafted offensive linemen like crazy for the last several years. They have two tackles. I mean, they certainly think they could improve those position groups if they wanted to, but it's a nice draft for them to be able to take advantage of what other teams need and just kind of move back and still be able to get everything they want.
John, when you look up and down the board, we all know about the big names expected to be taken, primarily offensive players. We'll get into that in a bit. Who are some names that you think might shock people, that might climb the draft board, that aren't necessarily getting the same type of buzz?
You know, it's always hard to know projection-wise, like who's going to end up going, you know, if I'm predicting who's going to end up going high. But there are some players that I really like that I feel like right now it's like, oh, is Johnny Newton for Illinois defensive tackle, is he going to fall out of the first round altogether? There's, you know, he's at the tail end of some of these mocks. Some of these mocks he's not in there. And so I find that one really fascinating because I think there's a good chance he's the best defensive player in this class. And so I feel like I'd be considering him in Atlanta at 8, Chicago at 9. Latu's another one. You know, I think Latu is the best pass rusher in this class, edge pass rusher. And so I would be taking him pretty high as well. Obviously, there's the medical concern with him, and I can't really speak to that to the degree that teams will be able to. If he falls, you would guess maybe that's part of the concern. But he's stayed healthy the last two seasons. He's been on the field for every game. He's been dominant production, dominant tape. His testing was pretty good. So I just feel like he's the full package at that position. And those guys are sometimes in the back end of the first round, or in Newton's case, not at all. So those are two guys I'm definitely higher on. And if they go higher than what's being projected right now, I certainly will not be surprised by that. So those two are ones that I'd look out for tonight.
Yeah, Jerzon Newton expected to be a world-class wrecker in the middle of a line. John Ledyard is here with us, the JR Sportby Show on the Infinity Sports Network. What does it say to how the NFL has evolved, where we can look at a draft and just go quarterback, wide receiver, offensive lineman, and then just say, okay, now who's going to go chase the quarterback? How has the draft and the approach changed from like 10, 15, even 20 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've been trending this way for a long time now, but those frontline players that can make plays behind the line of scrimmage, I mean, most valuable position on a defense, you know, they're paid like the most valuable players on defense. I think our top six or seven highest paid defensive players, or maybe more than that, are frontline defensive players, defensive tackles, or edge rushers. And so very easily the most important positions on a defense. So those guys that can win 1v1 up front, they can create disruption against the run, against the pass, to get their hands on the ball up front, all of those things. And you don't have a ton of them in this class, but I think, I mean, Latu's one to me. I think Johnny Newton is really good. Byron Murphy from Texas, those three are really, I have first round grades on them. And I think Dallas Turner, you know, he's might be the first defensive player off the board. He is my number two edge. He certainly has a chance to be one of those guys if he can continue to develop. I do like him. I don't love him quite as much as some other people. And then there's some other guys maybe as you get down the board. I'm not quite as high on the other guys getting to that level of those three or four if Turner can keep developing. But if you have a couple like that in this draft, those guys usually go in the top 15 picks of the draft. So this year, unusual situation. Four quarterbacks are going to go top 10 probably. You could see six in the first round, they say. Well, I'll believe that when I see it. But I think those are all like possibilities that you could end up getting some of these guys later than you would in a normal draft just because of some of the abnormalities at the top of the draft with all these quarterbacks, all these tackles, and then three game-changing wide receivers that pretty much are universally thought of as top 10 picks.
John Ledyard is joining us from the Audibles and Analytics podcast. You talk about Latu from UCLA. If this man didn't get the neck injury that knocked him out, potentially could have ended his career flat and period, where would he be drafted? Is he going to fall because of the injury? Is somebody just going to go forget his neck? We're going to draft him.
Yeah, I think he's still going to end up going before pick 20. I mean, there's just too many teams that need that role, that pass rusher. He's been healthy for 2 years now. There's no signs of any type of injury when you watch him play. He's even adapted just to how he plays as a tackler, I was reading the other day, to make sure he keeps his neck out of collisions and things. So It certainly just feels like at this point that stuff's in the past. Teams could have a totally different opinion on that. They could think that this is degenerative. I just don't know from my vantage point. So it just doesn't sound like there's been all this negative buzz around him. Most of the forecasting type of draft media, the guys who kind of are more on the reporting side, they still seem to be mocking him in the top 20. And so I still think he's probably projected to go in that range of the draft. And if he falls, that would, you know, maybe those storylines will creep back up. But right now, it doesn't seem like there is a whole lot of smoke there.
Now, John, when you talk about the quarterbacks projected to go at the top, there's some conversations as to whether or not Jaden Daniels or Drake May, who do you think grades out better than the other? Drake May looks like more of a project.
I think there are things about Drake May that are more of a project. His accuracy concerns me on tape quite a bit. I still do have him at QB2 behind Caleb in this class. I have a tier below Caleb. I think it's pretty close between him and McCarthy, and I don't think Daniels is a distant fourth for me, but I do think with Daniels, I'm really concerned about how little he stands in and throws in the face of any type of pressure or when he has to move off his first read. His first initial kind of reaction is to get out of the pocket and usually to run. Now, he is an unbelievable athlete, and when he does throw from the pocket, he is very good. Like, he's a very accurate quarterback, but some of his tendencies in the face of pressure or when that first read isn't open might not work as well in the NFL as they did in college. May is more of a mechanical issue, I think. Like, there's times where his situation was horrendous, by the way. Daniels was in a very QB-friendly offense, similar to kind of some of the offenses we've seen in Washington this year, Tennessee last year with Hendon Hooker. Like, a lot of these offenses, you're just not going to get all this space that you have in the college game in the NFL to throw the ball. And so I do think things will get harder for him in the NFL, where May, there's a little more pro-style stuff, but at the same time, you know, he was, I think, mechanically a little bit further behind what some of the other guys are. Now he's capable of making throws from different platforms, probably better than anybody in the draft, except for maybe Caleb. There's a lot of throws in his tape where he's kind of guys hanging on him, and he makes a throw way down the field, and he threw the left-handed ball with a defender on his back and for a touchdown. And so he can do some really cool second reaction, improvised, out-of-structure stuff. And he wants to play in structure, but the structure was so bad at North Carolina, the protection, it wasn't even just the O-line, the backs, the tight ends, everybody. It was just a terrible protection situation at UNC. So he's really running for his life this whole past year. The offense was different than the year before. I think that really hurt things. I don't think he had the same level of talent at a wide receiver, and so guys weren't open as often. He had to really create and make a lot of magic happen for that team. And I don't think he was as good as the year before because of that, but I do wonder if in the NFL, better situation, if he gets in a better situation, that very much remains to be seen. If New England takes him, that's a little bit scary. But I do think he could be even better in the NFL. And McCarthy, people are kind of missing, I think. This guy has really, really good tools. Like, I think he's not like a Mac Jones. People talk about him like, oh, he's just a Mac, like, there's no ceiling. You're like, no, he is a cannon for an arm, and he's an awesome athlete. He might be a better athlete than most of these other guys that are getting drafted around him. And so I think he's can be really good in the NFL. It's going to – the questions with him are what happens when defenses are preparing for him rather than for this Michigan run game and for all the play action and everything. Is the scheme going to be as friendly, right? They got him a lot of good stuff at Michigan just from their scheme. Now, it's a lot of pro-style stuff, but he could go somewhere that asks him to be a totally different type of quarterback, a shotgun quarterback, a spread quarterback, something like that. That's not who he's been. I can't say what he'll look like, whereas I've seen May and Williams and some of these other guys, Daniels, in different offenses, different situations, and I've seen a little bit more. So that's the unknown with McCarthy knocks him down people's boards to me more than anything, because I think what you see on tape is generally pretty clean. There's some things here and there that I think can be continue to be ironed out, but I do think these are three pretty solid quarterback prospects. I don't think anybody's quite on the level of Caleb Williams, but I think they're pretty good prospects, and I think you have to take them in the top 10 and take your chances if you're an NFL team.
Well, John, final question for you before I let you go. Nobody talks about Bo Nix. There's so many other prospects at the quarterback position that jumped in front of him. What about Bo?
Yeah, I mean, very much a point-and-shoot offense at Oregon, color in the numbers type of system, first read, lots of screens, just a design spot to put the ball all the time, very low, averaged up the target, so he wasn't throwing the ball down the field all that often. I think the tools are okay. Like, I think he's, you know, probably solid enough in that capacity, but, I mean, when he was in more of a real offense at Auburn, it was kind of a mess. And I think now, even when you see when he is forced off that first read, when things do go awry up front or protection breaks down, just how much his game falls apart is really concerning. I think that offense at Oregon, I give him a lot of credit. He didn't look like a draftable player at Auburn, and then they brought him in and they've turned him into a guy who could potentially be in this first round. We'll see. And they deserve credit for that, and he does too, for buying into the system. But I do think he is pretty much a guy you have to scheme pretty heavily around. And so I'm just not usually as excited about quarterbacks like that, where, you know, they're kind of going to be propped up by everything around them, in my opinion, more so than who they are. I just think that keeps such a lid and a ceiling on what your team is capable of doing eventually. So that'll be a flavor for somebody. Could be Sean Payton. We'll see. He probably has that confidence to think he can fix any quarterback or get any quarterback to be good enough in his system. So maybe that ends up being a surprise fit in the first round, but I'm just not that interested in him in round one.
No, we'll find out soon enough. Yeah, I'd be shocked if he was taken in round number one. Well, John, thank you for taking the time to hop on and lend your expertise. Where can people follow you and your work, whether it's with the Steelers, the Audibles and Analytics Pod? Fill us in.
Yeah, for sure. So I do podcasts about the Steelers a couple times a week for the Yins No Ball podcast. That one's free and available for everybody wherever you listen to podcasts. And then I also run a Substack, and my Audibles and Analytics podcast is several times a week. I do that with Ollie Connolly. We are in-depth football's X's and O's, player evaluation, scheme breakdowns. We do that stuff in the NFL season. We do the draft, free agency. We do all of it. We hit it all pretty hard and go pretty in-depth. So if you're a pretty big football fan and you like to go a little bit deeper than what you might get on TV and things like that, definitely a good spot to subscribe. It is like a couple bucks a month. I mean, it's like $4.17 a month if you do the annual subscription, or $5 a month. So it's a pretty cheap cost, but we do podcasts a couple times a week over there, and some of my written stuff, my draft board and all that can be found over there as well. And then always on Twitter at Ledyard, LEDYARD, NFL Draft on Twitter.
Hey, John, thank you so much, and enjoy the draft, and we'll see what happens, all right? Take care, my man.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Appreciate you having me.